The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Students of the Game. My name is Alex Baumann, and as always I'm joined by Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Now let's jump into AAA. The first story we have today is the NBA has renamed and redesigned its highest profile trophies in honor of some Hall of Fame players. The MVP trophy has been renamed for Michael Jordan, the Defensive Player of the Year has been renamed for Hakeem Olajuwon, the Rookie of the Year has been renamed for Wilt Chamberlain, the Sixth Man of the Year has been renamed for John Havlicek, the Most Improved Player has been renamed for George Mikan, and the NBA has also added a new award, the Clutch Award, named after Jerry West. So do you think the NBA got these awards right, or are their players more deserving?
I think overall they got them right. I think it's obviously a really cool idea. We see this a lot, especially in professional sports, of a player who has won that trophy a certain amount of times or has the most wins in that trophy or whatever has been the most impressive gets, you know, the honor of being that trophy named after them. I think it's a cool deal. I do think they got most of these right. And overall, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was only a matter of time before they did it and moved on to more current, bigger names. And, you know, I think with every single one of these awards, they hit the nail with the hammer here, right in the head. It was spot on for me.
Yeah, for me, the only award that I kind of disagreed with was Most Improved with George Mikan. Maybe thought Kobe Bryant should have got that, the way he improved over his career and how everybody kind of recognizes him as one of the players that really pushed them to work harder. All right, the second story we have today is the NCAA has announced that Charlie Baker, the current governor of Massachusetts, will serve as the next NCAA president effective March 2023. So do you think they got the hire right? And what should we expect from Charlie Baker when he takes over?
This guy has no experience being in any sort of athletics whatsoever at all. Obviously, he was one of the highest rated governors and one of the highest rated elective representatives of the nation with being the governor of Massachusetts. But he has no prior experience in terms of athletics and running an organization, an association like the NCAA. I really don't know. I don't know what goes into that job, what kind of requirements and what the hiring process of something like that or something of a position of that caliber is like. But I guess we'll see. I don't imagine a lot will change, especially very soon, but we'll see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up his inexperience with athletics, but I think really the NCAA is more looking for a stronger leader as we've gotten into this NIL system where, you know, there's not really any huge rules in place to stop players from, you know, having this much freedom. Maybe they're looking for a leader to kind of take control of, this NIL era and, everyone in these sports.
Yeah, I mean, hiring a politician like this, you would expect that the NCAA is expecting him to help form these policies around the NIL and the transfer portal and less like the Wild Wild West like it is now and sort of get some regulation there. And he has experience with it. So, you know, I hope that he can really help the NCAA out on that part. All right, Nathan, there were some bowl games this week. What do you got for us?
Yeah, let's go ahead and start off with UAB versus Miami, Ohio. UAB ended up pulling this out 24-20. They had a late score on, I believe it was a fourth down, running right up the middle. Very big play. Alex, I know you're a huge UAB fan. You go to UAB. This season might not have been what people were hoping for, but with a bowl game win, how does this, you know, improve UAB going into next year, especially with a new head coach?
Yeah, it's a great way to end the year and, you know, keep this hype up with this team. It keeps the winning streak of having a winning or streak of having a winning season continuing. But this new staff coming in with Trent Dilfer is entirely different than what they've had in the past. It's going to be interesting to see if they can continue the excellence they've had under Bill Clark and Brian Vincent. So hopefully Trent Dilfer can continue to do that.
Oh, Bill O'Brien haunting nightmares. All right, Greg, I'm going to flip it around to you. Do you think that UAB will be able to, retain this talent and keep improving with recruiting overall?
Yeah, and just like Alex said, winning a bowl game and continuing that, dominant success that we've seen from Vincent and from Clark is that first step for, not somebody like Dilfer. I know he wasn't super involved in the coaching of this game, but you throw him into this fire, not having any head coach experience at the college level, and the expectations are going to be high because this UAB program has seen success in the past, in the recent memory. But I think it'll be interesting. I think they can very easily get back to that level, especially where they are in terms of a program and in terms of a region. UAB is always going to be really good athletically, no matter what. They've got the facilities. They've got the UAB can do it. It's just about having that guy to do it. And it just comes down to if Dilfer can him and get his staff around him and get in there and get to work.
And it's probably going to take some time, but we'll see what happens in the future. All right, let's go ahead and highlight what happened with Florida versus number 14 Oregon State in the Las Vegas Bowl this weekend, where Oregon State ended up winning 30-3. How about this absolute come apart from the Florida Gators? They just pretty much showed up to Las Vegas and forgot they had a football game to play. What do you, I mean, what did y'all see this weekend? What happened to them?
Just like you said, Nathan, I don't think they knew that they played a game. The fact that they kicked that field goal with about 30 seconds left just so they didn't get shut out is embarrassing, not just from an SEC perspective, but in a general football perspective. But give credit to Oregon State. They played lights out. Again, we talked about with UAB, that is a perfect way to end a year. With how successful they were this year, being able to end this way with a dominant win over an SEC school, it's a great win for Oregon State and a true come apart from the Florida Gators.
Yeah, I mean, the Gators really didn't have a lot of players available. 21 players appeared in games this season, did not play in this game. Anthony Richardson, Ventrell Miller, and their All-American guard, Osiris Torrance. So that was kind of a big factor there. Also, didn't have their backup quarterback because he was arrested for some things that I won't discuss on this show. But yeah, the Florida Gators really just fell apart. Don't know how long Billy Napier's got there if they continue to play like this.
Yeah, it kind of sucks seeing that all these people sat out and these are the bench players and that's people up and this is what product they put out on the field. And honestly, if I'm a Florida fan, I'm nervous going into next year because that was not great.
No.
All right, Greg, let's go ahead and get into college basketball, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely. Big time games in college basketball this week. We had Feast Week. It was unbelievable the amount of games, the amount of good matchups that we had during that week. Then we kind of slowed down for finals week, but we're right back into this non-conference action. This week, Alabama played against Memphis at home, ended up winning 91-88, and then Gonzaga in Birmingham ended up losing their second game of the year 100-90 in a crazy offensive battle. But first, let's talk about that Memphis win for Alabama. Obviously, that is a big win. Memphis is a team that has proven that they can beat SEC teams. They are 4-1 against the SEC this year, including wins over Auburn, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt, and only losing this one by three. So Memphis has proven that they can compete with the best of the best with how experienced they are. We talked about them last week with after their win over Auburn, but Alabama continuing to prove that offensively, they're one of the best teams in the country. They're shooting the ball well. They shot 37% from three in this game. Brandon Miller continues to prove that he's one of the best players, if not the best player in all of college basketball. What did y'all see from Alabama in this game?
Yeah, I'm just gonna go ahead and start off with highlighting that in this game we had 19 turnovers, which continues to be consistent that we like to turn over the ball a lot more than a lot of these other teams do. Now, when it comes to our offensive production, it is, top tier. It is some of the best in the country. But then you flip to the defensive end, and it feels like we've slowed down a lot. I've, we started the season off with a lot of shot blockers and everything that you want to see on the defensive end, really, constricting teams and what they're able to do. And then we turn around and we're giving up 88 points a game, 100 points a game. It's not something you want to see as an Alabama fan and honestly a college basketball fan who wants to actually see good defensive gameplay.
It's good to see Brandon Miller get his feet back under him after that 0-for against Houston. And also, it's good to see that Mark Sears plays good, the team plays good. As we'll see, when he doesn't play good, the team plays terribly, like Gonzaga. Also, good to see Jade Bradley continue his good play as well. But also Kendrick Davis of Memphis. He's really showing that he can be in the National Player of the Year conversation, as he had 30 points against Bama.
Yeah, no doubt. Kendrick Davis continuing to prove that he's one of the best point guards and compete with any other point guard and any other guard in general, you know, going through that tough Memphis non-conference schedule that included five SEC teams that they won four against. But moving on to talk about this Alabama versus Gonzaga game. Game was played in Legacy Arena in Birmingham. Obviously, an offensive output, 190 points total scored, 36 points from Brandon Miller on 6 of 11 from 3, 29 points and 10 rebounds from Drew Timmy. An outstanding game for both of those two. Both of those two continue to prove, again, just like we talked about with Kendrick Davis, that they are National Player of the Year contenders. But, Nathan, I want to throw to you. You just discussed how Alabama, you know, started the year off really good defensively and then has these two games where they allowed 88 points and then 100 points to this Gonzaga team. What do they need to do to change, to maybe, you know, change the outcome of a game like this?
You know, it goes back to one thing. It's just physicality. I've seen that we've slipped down on being able to hustle around the court and move to certain positions. And, you know, we're afraid to, you know, initiate contact sometimes. Maybe that's because of certain foul calls we've gotten in the past, or we're trying to avoid setting up injuries or anything like that. But it's really hard to watch someone continuously score on you the way Drew Timmy does, where he just gets back into the paint. It's really insanity because we rarely change the matchup until later in the game, where we finally moved Charles Bediako off him and put Noah Gurley on him. And I thought that was a right decision, where Drew Timmy kind of made some mistakes. But it, you know, if we want to have more defensive success, we just got to play more physical. And, you know, in this matchup, of course, Charles Bediako is skinnier. He's leaner. It's an easy person for Drew Timmy to back down the paint and score on. So I didn't like that matchup, especially.
Yeah, when it comes to Mark Sears, again, he didn't have a great game this game either. This game against Gonzaga kind of affected the entire team. Also, Jaden Bradley, he stepped up in the absence of Mark Sears scoring. But one thing I've looked at Jaden Bradley is his lack of being able to shoot from the three-point line like J.J. Davidson last year. It's going to become a struggle later in the year when teams start realizing that and kind of play off of him and force him to take those three-pointers. Also, looking at Javon Plinterly, he plays 12 minutes and has three turnovers and 2 points. His turnovers seem to be like a continual thing, game in and game out. I'm not sure what's going on there. We need to fix it real quick, or this is going to be trouble for this team that really needs that depth at that point guard position.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and highlight the fact that we had 21 turnovers in this game. So it's a consistent factor that we turn the ball over and we lose basketball games because of it. If we, you know, lessen the turnovers, stop making these sloppy passes, stop trying to force things where they don't need to be forced, then, you know, we play a tighter game, we have more possessions. Because looking at, you know, the score chart here, I mean, Gonzaga put up 10 more shots than we did, which, you know, they made 10 more. So that's the advantage right there. If we have those possessions back, we score points, it's a closer game, we might even win the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to point out one thing for Gonzaga really quick. You know, last week we talked about with the Alabama-Houston game, Houston made that run to start the second half to go up, 13 points. And they just kind of kept wavering it because they didn't have that guy that, because Marcus Sasse was being locked up by Neomari Burnett, they didn't have that guy that they could go to for points. With Gonzaga, they made that run with Malachi Smith hitting two straight threes and going up 10. Once they had that lead, Gonzaga never wavered because they had that guy in Drew Timmy. So having that guy that you can go to for an automatic bucket that you know he can score in any situation at any point in the game is so vital and so very important. And not only Gonzaga has one, but Alabama does too, and Brandon Miller. So moving on to talking about the Auburn Tigers. On Wednesday, they were able to pick up a home win against kind of a tune-up game, but only win by 8 against Georgia State. Katie Johnson did not play due to a coach's suspension for one game. I heard that he was maybe late to practice, but that is just rumor. So we needed, you know, we needed scores to step up. KD's proven that he's one of our reliable scorers, you know, not in an efficient manner, but in a total points manner. But you look at Auburn in this game, you've got to understand how good Jalen Williams is playing. He had 20 points. He had 8 rebounds. He had 3 blocks in this game. He went 2 of 3 from three and 8 of 11 from the field. He's by far the most efficient player on Auburn's team when it comes to scoring. Obviously, Wendell Green's probably the best overall shooter in terms of overall buckets, but due to efficiency and due to the way the offense runs, Jalen Williams has got to get more looks. He's got to turn into that guy, and I think he can, that we were talking about with Drew Timmy and Brandon Miller. He's got to be the guy that Auburn goes to during the last set, because last year it was a no-brainer. You went to Jabari Smith, but this year they're having a little bit of trouble with their identity, trying to figure out who that guy is and what set they can go to get those final baskets to put away a game, because Auburn was ahead. You know, they went on that run in the middle of the second half, got up big, and then kind of wavered back down until pushing away at the end. What did y'all see from Auburn just in this game?
I think it goes back to the fact that they're only shooting 12 threes a game, and they only made 3 in this one. So the fact that, you know, they don't have a perimeter-centric offense kind of hinders their ability to put up more points than other teams, because that's just basic math there. Threes are better than twos. No, that's pretty much a Nate Oates thing right there. But having someone to be able to, you know, make outside shots, I know Jalen Williams has been able to do that. He looks like the main scorer. But for him to take over the offense, people just need to trust in him and let him, you know, go to work, let him score the buckets, get back, play defense, and, you know, continuously score. Because when you have these offensive possessions where you're working the ball around and people who might not be efficient shooting wise put up shots, it's not really what you want to see as an Auburn fan.
Yeah.
One thing I like to point out is Trey Orr, their highest recruit in this recruiting class, really hasn't been playing well. Scored 1 point this game. Didn't play well against USC either, as we'll see.
Let me tell you, let's talk about Johan Trey Orr. He's a 5-star originally from France, who moved to Glendale, Arizona to play his high school ball, started playing basketball in 10th grade. And that has really, really come to fruition here, because it does not look like he knows where he's going, does not know like he knows how to put himself in positions, does not look like he's putting any effort into, you know, going after loose balls. You know, saw it 3 or 4 times in the USC game where he just didn't look like he wanted the basketball when the ball came to him. We got some problems there. But moving on to talk about the USC game, Auburn does fall to the Trojans by a score of 74-71. Again, Jalen Williams he needs to be the number one guy. Overall, he did get hurt in the middle of the second half and didn't come back, as well did Wendell Green after coming back from an injury at the end of the Georgia State game. So injuries kind of hurt there. But look, two guys that you got to discuss in this game for Auburn are Jani Broome and Trey Donaldson. They're your other two outside of Jalen Williams that you need to figure out how to get them involved in the offense, whether Wendell's healthy or Wendell's not healthy. Jani Broome's going to have to start touching the ball possession after possession after possession. And so is Trey Donaldson. Trey Donaldson looks like the most composed freshman on Auburn's team. He needs to be on the floor. How do you get him in those certain situations?
Yeah, I think one player I want to highlight here is that KG Johnson did not score from the field. All his points, you know, all his 6 points came from the line. He also turned the ball over 6 times, which kind of hinders what Auburn was able to do on the offensive end. I know that KD is able to take over a game and score out of points, but he just wasn't able to here, which was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, one thing, like with Alabama, is Auburn had a lot of turnovers this game, most of which came in the second half. They had 23, kind of hindered them moving forward, let USC go on that big run with Boogie Ellis. Also, there was some questionable officiating under that basket. I was listening to the game and watching it. There was some missed calls. They seemed to favor USC a lot of the time, but you really can't blame officials when you have 23 turnovers.
Exactly. I 100% agree, Alex. When you shoot five less shots and have 23 turnovers, you can't really talk about the officials, even though there were some questionable calls and some questionable foul counts in terms of Auburn having 25 fouls to USC's 15. And, you know, that just comes with part of playing on the road. You know, you can't win on the road with 23 turnovers and 25 fouls. And Auburn played well in this game to win, especially counting the injuries that happened to both Williams and Green, two of the best players on the team. And I think that's a good sign for this Auburn team, but that can't happen. So, Alex, what do we got from the NFL? This crazy NFL weekend.
Yeah, so the first game you got is the Colts and Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings completed the biggest comeback in NFL history, erasing a 33-point deficit to beat the Colts 39-36 in overtime. For Matt Ryan, the quarterback of the Colts, he's now been on the wrong side of the largest comeback in NFL history and the largest comeback in Super Bowl history. Kind of difficult for him on that part. So what do you see from the Vikings that show they're contenders or pretenders in this game?
This game was unbelievable. The Colts looked so dominant in the first little bit. And I also want to point out the Colts only had one offensive touchdown in this game. The others were blocked field goal return for a touchdown and a pick six, and then a bunch of field goals. So it wasn't like their offense was unbelievably clicking the whole time, you know, especially with Jonathan Taylor being out with or left the game with an injury. But the Vikings, it's a tale of two different halves completely. They looked absolutely offensively dominant in the second half compared to absolutely nothing in the first. What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, it's one of the games that kind of seem rigged, to be honest. you have the Colts taking a 33-0 lead, and of course Matt Ryan is on the Colts now, so it just seems kind of convenient for them to, you know, come all the way back and beat them. You want to like look at what the Vikings had going for him. Kirk Cousins has an extremely good game, where he passes for 460 yards and four touchdowns, but he continues to rely on Justin Jefferson, which might be the best wide receiver in all of the NFL right now. Yeah. And of course, Dalvin Cook puts up tremendous yards and is able to, you know, make receptions. I know there's a huge screen pass too that he made. So you look at how the Colts kind of fell apart. Who do you blame it on here?
I mean, you have to blame it on Jeff Saturday.
Yeah.
The way he's coaching.
Yeah, the coaching, the ability not to put away the game, you always kind of put on a coach. The problem with putting it on a coach like Jeff Saturday is he is the interim head coach. He took over just a few weeks ago, so that's a hard blame.
Yeah, but I mean, they took the foot off the gas
completely. There. Yeah, yeah, you always blame the coach for allowing something like this comeback to happen.
Yeah,
they definitely got more conservative as time went on. So that's something to look at going into the rest of the season.
Yep. It looks like they shut down Jonathan Taylor for the rest of the year as well with that injury. All right. Another game we got is the Giants versus Commanders. The Giants completed a goal line stand with Darnay Holmes breaking up a pass intended for the Commanders wide receiver Curtis Samuel. It looked like there was an obvious pass interference call on Holmes as he was draped all over Samuel. It looked like he was just tackling him before the ball was even there. But that wasn't even the worst call or questionable officiating of the game, because on the same drive, the Commanders had actually scored a touchdown, but wide receiver Terry McLaurin was flagged for an illegal formation. And it looked like it appeared on the play, and it also was confirmed by McLaurin that he had checked with the line judge twice about his position on the line, and the official gave him a thumbs up saying he was good on his positioning. However, he was still flagged at wiping away that touchdown. And after the game, the referee said official typically doesn't have to tell a player whether they're legally positioned or not. If he doesn't have to, then why did he?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. These officials, and I don't understand the pass interference that has become such a anomaly, especially in pro football with, you know, and I hate to bring this up, Nathan, but the Vikings and the Saints with the Rams and the Saints as well. You can't miss those kind of calls, but with the illegal formation, if you go back and watch the play, he does check twice with him and the referee gives a thumbs up. So I don't, if he did, and just like you said, Alex, if he did check with him, why did he check with him? Because if he doesn't have to, then McLaurin needs to scoot up even farther. I don't understand, because at that point, if I'm Terry McLaurin, I'm good, because if I scoot up even farther, because especially being way outside, he was way out on the wide out on the right side. That's kind of hard to tell where the football is. You don't want to be lined up over the line or in the neutral zone, but that's on the official. That's on the sideline official.
Yep. Yeah, it's gotten to the point where these officials kind of decide games, which ultimately that's just completely wrong. And you want to talk about this instance of where Terry McLaurin basically checked with the official and the official gave him the thumbs up saying, hey, you're good. You're in a good spot. You know, it's a legal formation. And then as soon as you snap the ball, he throws that flag and you get penalized and you go ahead and talk with him. But, you know, you are limited to what you can say to him. Of course, your coach doesn't want you talking to him. But it's one of those things where, you know, as a Saints fan, I have personal experience against terrible calls, missed calls. So you look at, you know, the pass interference that wasn't called. You could have seen holding called there too. I mean, there are multiple times in the game where the ref should have been able to make a certain call and they didn't, which, you know, leads me into my next discussion. What are we supposed to do to kind of keep these refs under control?
I mean, the one thing is doing it replay challenges, replaying the penalties, stuff like that. But the one that comes into that is it's going to become a lot more subjective, and you know it's going to be going to have some sort of rule there. So where like if this happens, this is pass interference. This has got to happen for it to be pass interference. All right, another game that happened, a crazy game, was the Raiders versus Patriots. Patriots wide receiver Jacoby Myers on the last play of the game attempted to ladder the ball backwards. I believe it was intended for Mac Jones.
Was he throwing it back to Mac?
I don't know, but it landed at the Raiders linebacker Chandler Jones's lap, and he recovered the ball and scored the game-winning touchdown as time expired, and he stiff-armed Mac Jones on his way to the crib. That was an interesting thing there. And also another questionable officiating call was Raiders wide receiver Keelan Cole caught a touchdown. And it was pretty obvious he was out of bounds. Clearly. I mean, you could see it on the replay. And they confirmed it through the replay that he scored a touchdown. And then after the game, the NFL senior VP of officiating said there was not enough visual evidence to overturn the ruling on the field. I'm not sure how there wasn't. Maybe the ref needs to get some glasses. But yeah, that was a terribly missed call once again by officials.
I know they have more camera angles than they even show on the TV, but they were showing one on the TV that was pretty clear. That was pretty visually evident, if I say so myself. But that last play, number one, they ran a draw play, which normally I would consider let's just go into overtime. This is tied at 24. Let's play for overtime here. It's not near long enough to or short enough to try a Hail Mary or try a field goal. So let's just go into overtime. They ran the draw play, got some yards, threw it back to Jacoby Myers. And I don't know what Jacoby Myers was thinking he was going to do, but he threw it. Not only was the only Patriot near him Mac Jones, which I don't know why you throw it back to Mac, because at that point, Mac can't attempt a forward pass. why would you throw it back to Mac? But he threw it right to Chandler Jones. And the only guy to stop Chandler Jones on the way from between Jones and the end zone was poor Mac Jones. And if people are blaming that on Mac for not tackling Chandler Jones, why don't you all go try tackling Chandler Jones as he's running with the ball? That's a 10-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle. I think Mac did a pretty good job, honestly. They did a better job than any of us could have.
You know, just sitting here thinking about it makes me facepalm. The official J.R. Smith of the NFL, Jacoby Myers, decides he wants to throw the whole game away by basically handing the ball to Chandler Jones to take it to the house. Poor Mac Jones is in the way. Everyone's blaming him for what's happening on the offensive end. He's just trying to win a football game. Jacoby Myers is so lost that he doesn't know the score. What's like something out of a Warriors Cavs series? It was just
No kidding.
But why would he do this? Overtime, run out of bounds, do something smart. But I want to play all the way along as Ramondre Stevenson decided he wanted to lateral the ball to him, which was not the greatest idea either.
Yeah.
It just went down.
Just go out of bounds.
Just go down and go to overtime.
Yeah. But
that's why they called the draw play.
Watching this happen has to be the biggest joke of all time. Jacoby Myers must have had money on the game or something. Call him Calvin Ridley with how much he bets on his own team to lose. but moving forward, the Patriots, I don't know what to tell y'all. I mean, y'all need to make some changes. Someone needs to be cut. Someone needs to be fired. Good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck to you. That was something from Jacoby Myers there. I wonder what the locker room was like after the game.
Okay.
Bill Belichick probably had a cow. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game. We hope you have a Merry Christmas.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.